You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Mike Rodak is a friend of ours and a reporter for ESPN.com covering the Buffalo Bills. He was at OTAs yesterday and today at One Bills Drive, and he joins us now. Mike, welcome back to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing fine. How's that weightlifting and the stretching and agility drills going so far over there?
It was thrilling. I've never seen a rubber band get so much attention in my life.
How about the heavy balls?
Oh, those were great, too. It was funny. I was taking a picture of one of those, and I think you could see it kind of depressed on the ground.
Wow.
As I took the picture. I mean, these are the things that amuse me on a Monday in April with football, I guess.
Well, let's talk about a little news here first. I guess the Bills are hosting DeJuan Landry on a free agent visit. But the thing I'm wondering about, Mike, is there any money left? you got to kind of save some money here to pay for the guys you're going to draft, right?
Yeah, exactly. The Bills have about, I think it's 7.3 million. That's according to the NFLPA. The NFL's numbers might be different, or the Bills' numbers might be different. That's simply a reality sometimes. But either way, I mean, we're talking probably around $2 million to sign your rookies. And I mean, undrafted rookies don't really count against the salary cap because of the top 51 rules. So you want to budget another $3 million, let's say, for in-season signings. That leaves the Bills with $1 or $2 million really to deal with Landry and potentially Brandon Spikes and anybody else they want to bring in before the season. So yeah, there's really not a whole lot to go around right now. Even, you know, going back a few weeks now, what Doug Whaley told me out in Arizona, which is that for the Bills right now, it's basically minimum salary signings if they do make any more free agent moves. So you would have to think that this is a pretty cheap deal. Now, we are almost a month into free agency now, and a guy like Landry who hasn't signed obviously isn't going to command too much money. I mean, at this point, he's just looking for a team. So the Bills can probably get away with, you know, signing him for something close to the minimum, probably around $1 million, $1.5 million per year. And that would probably be doable with their salary cap right now. But that could mean a guy like Brandon Spikes won't be here. It could mean anything they do along the offensive line between now and August probably won't happen. So they do have to consider the trade-off here, but they probably could get a deal done at a pretty low dollar like that.
Well, they've got, you know, you've got Aaron Williams coming back. Obviously, Denoris Searcy's gone. But you got Aaron Williams coming back, and then, you know, as you point out in your story, Duke Williams, Bakari Rambo, and Jonathan Meeks. Would linebacker be a higher priority? I mean, Spikes be a higher priority than Landry?
Really, in Rex's defense, I think safety is a bigger issue. Really, because Rex only uses two linebackers or two off-the-line linebackers. He's more one who, I mean, I don't want to get too complicated, but he's probably going to have more like five guys on the line, mm-hmm. including Manny Lawson or Jerry Hughes, Mario, and then your three big guys up front. So that's just the way his defense is structured. It's more of a 5-2 in some ways. And then you have safeties. He likes to use safeties, and Mike Pettine did as well in the sub packages. So go back 2 years ago now and think, what, Jim Leonard, Denoris Searcy, Jairus Byrd. The Bills had a pretty healthy rotation at safety, and they needed to have one. So the current Bills may be thinking the same thing. And again, you look at Duke Williams, Bakari Rambo, Jonathan Meeks, none of those guys anywhere near the experience that DeJuan Landry has after starting 126 games the last 9 years. So it would be in some ways like that Jim Leonard signing. I think Landry is a better player than Jim Leonard ever was, and especially last year, is one of the better safeties in the NFL. So it's not, you know, it's not a perfect comparison, but I think if you have that veteran back there who knows the defense and can kind of take some pressure off of Duke Williams or Bakari Rambo to step into a starting role, then I think it's a pretty good move for your team. But again, that assumes the financial aspect of this can all get worked out.
Talking with Mike Rodak from ESPN.com. As far as voluntary offseason training activities are concerned, what are the rules as far as like what coaches can and can't see, do or cannot do?
Well, they can't be out on the field at this point. Really, these first 2 weeks is just strength and conditioning coaches out on the field with the players doing the strength and conditioning drills. Can't be any footballs on the field. There can't be any football-related drills specifically. But the players can be in the facility, I think, for 4 hours per day of film study. So there is access that the coaches, head coaches, assistant coaches all have with these guys and starting to have them get to learn the playbook. Now, they can't do anything on the field for the Bills case. It's going to be April 28th is when they can have a three-day mini camp, which most teams can't because most teams have returning head coaches. They can't be on the field until OTAs in late May, but the Bills will have an on-field practice / instructional period the last week of April. So that'll be the first time that they can actually use footballs and sort of get things going from that end.
Talk with Mike Rodak, of course, from ESPN.com. Now, you had an interesting conversation with Percy Harvin yesterday. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, it was part of a big group, really, as Percy was brought out for the first time to the Buffalo media since he signed, which is almost a month ago now. And he certainly didn't lack any confidence. It was, there was talk about what happened in Seattle. And then he basically refuted that and said, yeah, New York, nothing happened in New York. Nothing heard about anything went on. Everything was kind of good there. And then he sort of threw in that, the world's going to see that I'm about ready to explode, or, not an exact quote there, but, he was pretty confident about what was going to happen this season for him. And this is a guy who, go back probably the last 3 or 4 years now, pretty underwhelming. The migraines and the injuries and the off-field stuff, and just hasn't quite been a consistent guy on the field as well. So it's a pretty bold statement for him to turn things around like that. I mean, he had three great seasons to start his career, but that's been a while now. It's been 4 years. So with no quarterback, and again, he had no concerns about the quarterback either. Somebody asked him, what was your thoughts, or is there any trepidation about coming into a situation like this in Buffalo where there's no quarterback? And he said, no, I didn't think about it at all. So I don't know if that's the smartest play on his part. Yeah, maybe he can get open a few times, but I don't know how many times that he's going to get the ball, especially considering the emphasis in the running game here and walk-ins and Clay and all that going on. So we'll have to see if he can actually live up to that pretty bold statement he made, but That was his message to us yesterday.
Well, it was funny because he mentioned the fact that, you got Sammy on one side and myself and Robert Woods on the other side, but with the way this offense is supposed to be structured, I don't see a lot of three-receiver packages going out there on the field. At least he sounds diplomatic.
Right, yeah. That was a strange part about the signing in the first place, was that it didn't make sense for the Bills to kind of extend, it was $4 million, the cap number is really $6 million cash this year to him. For a third receiver. Now, unless Robert Woods falls off the face of the earth and Percy Harvin becomes your full-time number two receiver, then, it's a weird signing because you'd think in this offense, really, number two tight end would almost be more valuable or would be more valuable than a third receiver. And right now, the Bills' number two tight end is Chris Gregg or Marquise Gray, depending on who you think fits better in that spot. I think Marquise Gray is probably better as an off-the-line player. Gregg's probably better on the line. So either way, I think you're weaker at that position, partly because you devoted the resource to Harvin to sign him as your third guy. So, it's not the best situation for him. If I was, if I was Percy Harvin trying to find a landing spot, you like Marcus Ryan, you like Sanjay Lal, you have the familiarity factor there, but think about the quarterback situation and just the style of offense that they're going to run here. It didn't make a whole lot of sense other than the financial commitment the Bills made for him to come here.
Mike, I know that Rex has reiterated that this is going to be an open competition at quarterback, and we've got a three-way race here with Matt Cassel and EJ Manuel and Tyrod Taylor. Handicap that for us, if you would. Going forward here, is Cassel the leader here?
I think it is. Think of what these, between Rex and what Doug Whaley have said, but what they want the quarterback to be. They've pretty much said almost exactly that they want this quarterback to be a game manager and not make mistakes and get the ball where it needs to be and essentially just feed the beast in terms of handing it off to McCoy and getting the ball to Clay and Watkins and Harvin and Woods. Now, EJ could be that guy, but I think Matt Castle has probably shown more of that or a greater ability to do that in his career. I mean, he's proven that he can be a mediocre game-managing quarterback at best. That's what he is. So unless Matt Castle really collapses and really shows that he's taken a step back in training camp, then I think it makes sense for him to be back there because EJ Manuel is more of a wild card. You know, his ceiling is obviously higher, but his floor is a lot lower. And if you're looking for a game manager and someone who's not going to make mistakes, then naturally I think you go for the veteran quarterback over the younger player like EJ. But the other factor that you really have to consider is this is very well could be EJ's last chance in Buffalo. And the guys who drafted him here, I think, will want him to kind of see that through and see him get his chance. So we'll have to see how much that plays into the whole race this summer. But right now, I think my money would be on Castle.
You mentioned before about that there probably isn't much more money to address the offensive line right now. And Rex was talking these guys up, which I'm not surprised. I mean, he's going to talk everybody up right now and stuff. But that's still a huge concern when I look at this football team about this offensive line. I mean, if you're going to rely on coaching them up, supplementing maybe with your second-round draft pick, but we saw how that didn't work out last year. This is still a huge area of concern, isn't it?
Yeah, you sort of got conflicting messages on that from Doug Whaley at the owners' meetings. Vic Carucci had talked to him, I think, a few minutes before I did, and Whaley kind of mentioned how he wasn't pleased or wasn't, I guess they didn't quite execute their plan along the offensive line as well as they could have this offseason, which is a moment of honesty from Whaley, and I like to hear that. But then a few minutes later, I talked to him about, you know, what their draft strategy might be, and obviously that's a shrouded topic to begin with, but Whaley said, oh, yeah, you know, everybody might think we need help along the offensive line, but actually we have, you know, our centers in place, our tackles are in place, which is a little bit disconcerting considering what happened to Chantrell Henderson last year. He's one of the worst tackles in the NFL. And then he said, you know, we have a veteran guard coming back and Chris Williams, we have Urbick, and then, you know, we'll see what we get from Incognito. So there's actually confidence, you know, a few minutes later from Whaley about the offensive line. So I'm not quite sure where to pin him on the board as far as what he thinks, you know, of the offensive line. You know, it was a little bit all over the place. But, yeah, if there's not the right guy there in the draft, I don't think it makes sense to just reach for a guy and basically have another developmental player in the mix when you already have Henderson and Quanjo and Richardson and, you know, basically your roster is full at that position right now with a lot of those guys. So unless you can find a pretty solid, you know, day one starter who slips down the board, then I think it makes sense to go elsewhere with that pick. So as far as what they can do to help that position right now, I think the best answer is just pray. You know, pray that Incognito works out. Pray that Chris Williams' back holds up and pray that offensive line can keep that offense. I'm going to say keep it. It's probably get that offense doing better than it did last year. And that's probably all they can really do at this point. That's kind of the how things have unfolded, really, this offseason.
We're talking with Mike Rodak from ESPN.com. Did you get a chance to talk to Richie Incognito or other players about Richie Incognito yesterday?
We did. Kyle Williams was really the only one who I guess would have good insight on that, having played with him briefly back in 2009. Obviously, Eric Wood was in that locker room too, and when the whole scandal went down a couple of years ago, Eric Wood was pretty defensive about Richie. I think they shared the same agent at the time as well. And I think it's a matter of these guys didn't see those things or didn't interpret maybe the jokes in the same way as, you know, what happened down in Miami. So basically what Kyle Williams said was that his first-hand experience trumps anything else, and he had a great first-hand experience with Richie 6 years ago, and he was more inclined to believe that or put stock in that than he was with everything that happened in Miami. So I think that right now that's the approach that at least the veteran leaders in the locker room are taking. As far as the newcomers and the guys who haven't been around him, we'll have to see. And I think if the message is sent down from Wood and guys like Kyle Williams that, you know, everything's okay, and until something happens with him, you know, let's not judge him, basically, then I think everything will be okay and everything will run smoothly. But again, it's an unpredictable situation, and we'll just have to see that now that these guys are around each other, and you know, once Richie gets comfortable in the locker room, really, you know, how things unfold here.
Other than Sammy Watkins with his hip, were there other players kind of sidelined yesterday from doing the full off-season training activities?
Aaron Williams was the one who was sidelined, I guess. He was on the exercise bike there when all the other guys were out in the field. And, I mean, him and Sammy kind of meandered over to the regular group for a couple minutes, and then they went back to the bike. So I wasn't sure. I wasn't able to get an exact injury on Aaron Williams. He was one of the, I think it was 10 players that Rex listed as having off-season surgery. So Fred Jackson was in that group. Anthony Dixon, I think that one came out before. Dan Carpenter, Gilmore, McKelvin, and a couple others. Chris Williams, I think, his surgery was in during the season after his back injury. So really the feeling from Rex was that all those guys are going to be okay for the start of training camp. It's just a matter of how much they, you know, how much they'll do between now and that. I'm not really sure, but I mean, these things happen all the time. A lot of NFL players have surgeries in the off season, and I just don't think it's a huge deal at this point.
Mike, Marcell Dareus reached a plea agreement, pleaded guilty to two traffic violations, failure to keep right and imprudent speed. And he's going to be given a maximum fine of $150 for each violation, which he, I guess, paid before leaving the courthouse today. And then also has pledged to host a free football clinic in Erie County High School Clinic. When do you think the Bills are going to start addressing that issue of his contract extension?
I think really in the immediate future, if they haven't already, based on everything we heard from Doug Whaley a couple weeks ago, is, I mean, that's a priority for them. But it's a matter of, I think, you know, maybe we discussed this before, but, you know, the non-McKinsue contract and just how much it's going to hover over these negotiations, and having a $20 million tackle like that, I think, is appealing, or it's going to have Marcell and his agents licking their chops that, you know, what can we get in the open market another year from now, and the salary cap is higher, then salaries theoretically should go higher. So, I mean, the Bills, I don't think, can go that high. They already have, right now, the second highest 2016 cap number in the NFL, and I believe their 2017 cap number is either second or third highest. So they're already up against it, really, in some ways, in the next couple of years, and adding a $20 million a year guy like him would put them in a really bad spot. So I don't think they're going to be able to jump anything right away. But again, I mean, they'll have negotiations, they'll have discussions soon, unless Marcell and his guys are really willing to cave right now and take something less than what Sue got, then I don't really see a resolution coming anytime soon.
Mike, we appreciate you coming on and joining us today. We'll talk more in the coming days. Of course, you know, things have kind of quieted down today at OTAs, but we appreciate you coming on with us. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, definitely. I think we have Rex 13 more times between now and June 18th. So the next one is next Wednesday, the 15th. So we'll be hearing from him quite a lot this spring, so it should be fun.
So by that time, Mike, you're telling me like they'll be predicting a Super Bowl victory, right, by the time we get to mid-June?
I'm a little afraid. Each time he talks, he gets a little bit more confident. So
he might be
I don't know if it'll be mid-June. It could be next week. It could come that quickly. We'll see.
By mid-June, he'll be predicting a dynasty. So, Mike, thank you so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.